어주 대디나 지도 대디니다 무르 타마디 인드나 지예 헌든데야다 어주 대디니 시티시 지다 더부 리주 지나 지 가르스고 세바시마 드랴나다 어주 대디 딘다고 마르지 띠야 예르현드 띠야나 딘다고 어주 헌자 토바디다 무르 타마디 인딩이다
Now we come to the presentation of the list of those cities, and these are subduing others, killing and expelling. So this is the presentation of supreme, middling, and least cities by means of their nature. Now we look at the second type of category, let's say, by means of signs. And again, we have the supreme, the middling, and the least one. If you can have substances blazing with fire, then you have achieved the supreme. You have a sign of supreme achievement. If you just have emitting smoke, this is the middling one. And if you just have a generation of heat, then you have the least one. It's a sign of the least. For example, you can have some practitioners who, when they present the inner offerings in their Kabbalah, they can cause the substances to mix, to develop heat, to cause fire to burn. And when you have the actual flames of the fire coming out of the Kabbalah, you can say that you have a sign of supreme siddhi. There are others who are not capable to cause flames to come out of their inner offerings, but at least they can cause the smoke to appear. And finally, there are others who can who are at the level of causing the substances to heat up. Now, we look at them by means of the basis, where it says there are cities of bodies, of substances, and of resources. The cities of bodies are things such as manifesting incredible magnificence of the body, having full control of the body, and so forth. That would be the supreme. The second one would be the city of substances. And what is meant by that is to gain control over substances. And finally, we have resources, and again, this the middling one, which indicates that you have full control over different types of resources. You can change them, perhaps. And finally, we have also this this distinction on the basis by means of the speaker. And again, we have three categories here. The supreme is when you have the mantras pronounced by Arya beings. The second one is to have that pronounced by deities. And here Rinpoche said we're talking about worldly deities. here. And finally, the least one would be to have them proclaimed by those abiding upon the earth. So we're talking about certain types of spirits, non-human beings who can pronounce. They are the speakers, right?
ဩဒေတိနေကျေနောဒေတိနေရူကြီးဂိုနီနေတံငေါရံချေမွန်နေတံဆောင်ကြွေပါရဝန္တတောင်းနေငေါရံဒီရှိဝါတံဂျီဝါတံတပုလီနေရံပဲကျန်တဲ့တိရိစ္ဆာန်ဘရုဒံဩဂျီဒပိမေရုဒံဒုဂျီရူကြီးဒပ်ဒီဂုဒံချောက်တံဒဲတံသမယံတိတ္တဒပုရှိတံဩဂျီဒအရှာဂျီလာရုစမီဝါယန္တုတိရိစ္ဆာန်ဘရုကြီးဂိုနီမရှိဝလီဒပြာ
We come to the last one, which is by means of the lineage, and in this case our text here states the great stages of Tantra, where it says the actions of pacification, increase and wrath will be achieved in order by those belonging to the Tathagata lineage, the Lotus lineage and the Vajra lineage. This is how the supreme, medium and least siddhis are attained. So very clearly here we see that the Tathagata lineage is the one that will bring about actions of pacification. The Lotus lineage will be actions bring about actions of increase, and the last one, which is the Vajra lineage, will manifest those wrathful actions. Now, the text continues by saying that also in every lineage there are three types of siddhis and three types of activities, pacification, increase and wrath. And from this, it is the lord of each lineage, the consort of the lineage and the wrathful deities of the lineage that perform the three actions of pacification and so forth. So you would have the lord of a lineage performing actions of pacification, you would have the consort of the lineage performing actions of increase, and you would have the wrathful deities of the lineages performing the actions of wrath. So you can see that within every lineage we can subdivide further. Now, we had this presentation of the further division of the siddhis according to the lineage, and the author states here that through just those statements, the issue still remains unclear. Also, I have not seen this point clearly explained by later authors. And it leaves it as that. And from this point onwards, we have a debate arising. So one scholar says that trainees of Action Tantra with sharp faculties who accomplish the siddhi of knowledge bear for remaining alive for many eons can become enlightened in one lifetime. Right? So that's the question or the debate that is brought up. And To that, Nawon Pelden states that such a thing is not stated clearly in the stages of Tantra. Right? So Lama Tsongkhapa does not say anything like that. And if one accepts the statement of the general presentation of the classes of Tantra, which states that in the action and performance tantras, there is no system of enlightenment separate from that presented in the perfection system, then one should examine the assertion of needing to attain enlightenment on the basis of the dense array Akanishta Buddha field. So this second text that is mentioned, that is quoted here, the general presentation of the classes of Tantra, is by Kedrup Rinpoche. So in the Lama Tsongkhapa has not stated anything along, clearly anything along these lines on the stages of Tantra. Kedrup Rinpoche says that action and performance Tantra, the system of enlightenment, is not different at all from what we have the perfection vehicle. So the author, Nawon Pelden here, completes this section by saying, well, further investigation is needed into this point. Maybe we should look into this assertion of maybe one needs to become someone in the Akanishta Buddha field. Right, so at this point we come actually to the end of the presentation of the first of those four classes of Tantra. So we saw that in the presentation of the action Tantra, we had four parts. The first one was dealing with a way to become a suitable vessel for practicing this Tantra, which explains the type of empowerment that one has to receive for that. The second part had to do with the vows and commitment that needed to be maintained. The third part was the way to meditate on the path by keeping these vows and commitments pure. And the last part was the type of siddhis that are accomplished or manifested through those practices. Now we move into the second class, which is performance tantra. And again, the presentation of performance tantra will follow the same, let's say, format. We will have these four points. The first one will explain initiation. The second one will explain vows and commitments. The third one will be the way to meditate. And the fourth one will be the results or the siddhis that are attained through this practice. So if you see at the text, it says the way to progress on the path of performance tantra, there are four. First of all, becoming a suitable vessel. This will deal with the empowerment. The second one is keeping vows and commitments pure. The third one is the way to approximate the deity. And the fourth one is the way to attain the siddhis. So for the first one, which is becoming a suitable vessel, the text says, as it is stated in the performance tantra, one becomes a vessel suitable to meditate on the path by attaining the empowerment given in the mandala, possessing the essence of great compassion, and so forth. Now, actually, when we talk about performance tantra, the main text that we would be, the main tantra, the main text we will be taking information from is the text that is called the Manifest Enlightenment of Vairochana. Then it says, one requires the five knowledge empowerments, as one is not permitted by the water and crown empowerments alone to meditate on the path. So in the case of Action Tantra, we discuss this issue of how many empowerments are needed, and we very clearly stated here that water and crown empowerments are not enough. One needs to have the Vajra, the bell, and the name, a group of five altogether to meditate on the path. And apart from that, the rest seems to be similar with Action Tantra. Now, we come to the next point, which is the way to keep one's vows and commitments. And it says, the text says here, the root downfalls are similar to those in Action Tantra. Also, other commitments explained in Action Tantra are probably stated to be common to both. Now, remember that we do not take the tantric vows in this occasion. So what we take, the vows that we assume are the bodhisattva vows. And therefore, the root downfalls to guard against are the 18 root downfalls of the bodhisattva vows. Now, the text continues by saying, in the Manifest Enlightenment of Vairochana, it stated that it is necessary that one does not give up Immaculate Dharma and Bodhicitta even for the sake of one's life, that one is not miserly and does not cause harm to sentient beings, and abides in the basis of the training, abandoning the 10 non-virtuous actions. So in this particular text, the Manifest Enlightenment of Vairochana, we have some additional, let's say, commitments that are specific here to the performance tantra. Now, the rest should be more or less the same. Right, so we have already explained the first two parts, the first one having to do with the type of empowerments that is needed, and the second one describing the vows and commitments that need to be maintained. And now we come to the third part, which is the way to approximate the deity. And in this, we have two, the yoga with signs and the yoga without signs. Now, when we talk about yoga with signs, we talk about deity meditation. So we talk about the focal object will be the deity, the form of the deity. When we talk about science here, we talk about relative science. From among the two types of truth, definitely we're dealing with relative truth, and we're dealing with the aspect of the deity. One does the generation, self-generation as the deity, and one focuses on the aspect of oneself, the divine aspects of one's body, the details of that body. So this becomes yoga with science. Now, the second type of yoga, which is yoga without science, is actually practices that fall into the category of contemplating the ultimate rather than the relative truth. So with yoga, in the case of yoga without science, definitely one would be contemplating the subject of emptiness. Now, let's continue with the text, and after that, the presentation will follow, the explanation will follow. So for the first one, which is yoga with science, there is recitation with the four external branches, recitation with the four internal branches, whispered and mental repetition without deterioration of each set of these four branches, and retaining life force exertion during mental repetition. So there are different branches of recitation. Prior, in the case of Action Tantra, we talked about four branches of recitation. Here, we're talking about external branches of recitation, internal branches of recitation, and on top of that, we have whispered recitation, and the mental repetition. Now, let's look at the two types of recitation that are mentioned here, the mental recitation and the whispered recitation. Basically, what we need to know is that there are two types of recitation. One is silent and the other one is verbal. When we talk about mental recitation, it is the repetition of the mantra is done internally, is done quietly. You do not verbalize at all. Rather, you focus and you meditate on your aspect as on the body of the deity, or you might focus on the seed syllables and so forth, but you do not verbalize the sound of the mantra. In the second case, where we talk about whispered recitation, of course, this is a type of verbal recitation. It is not done loudly. It is done with a low voice, and this is how the name whispered recitation comes about. Now, in the case of Action Tantra, just a few minutes ago, we explained the four branches of repetition, and we say that those had to do, were described as being on the basis of the self, on the basis of other, on the basis of sound, and on the basis of mind. And how we explained those is that one can do the repetition by focusing, first of all, on the self-generation, focusing on the form of one's own divine form, as well as the existence of seed syllables and moons and the mantra syllables at the level of one's heart. As long as you're concentrating on what exists on yourself, you're doing it on the basis of the self. If you start observing all these aspects in the front-generated deity, then you're doing this on the basis of other. If you focus on the seed syllable that is surrounded by the letters of the mantra, and you can hear the sound of these letters resounding, then you can do it, you do it on the basis of the sound. And finally, when you do all this with an understanding that none of these aspects is separate from your own mind, then you do it on the basis of mind. So this was the four branches of repetition as they were presented in Action Tantra. Now, we come here into this level of performance tantra, where first of all we have this mention of the four internal branches of repetition, and then we have the four external. So we start by explaining the four internal ones. Again, one starts by doing the self-generation of the deity, but then at the level of one's heart, one places another deity, which has to be much smaller. And then at the heart of that deity, the size of one finger, about. Then, at the heart of that deity, one places one moon, and on top of that moon, you would have the seed syllable surrounded by the mantra. Right. And then, of course, by focusing on the letters of the mantra, you can hear the sound of the mantra resounding. And finally, you can have an understanding how all these aspects and all these forms have been established, but they are not separate from your own mind. So, in a way, whatever principles we had explained on previously, you can transfer them in this occasion. The difference is that you visualize a smaller deity at your heart, and then at the heart of that deity, you have the mantras. Right, so we can stop here and allow some time for questions and answers. I have already received one. I can read one from the paper and then go around for some live ones. Right, so the first question here is, please explain more details on why and how we need to meditate on conventional bodhicitta before we meditate on ultimate bodhicitta. How these two meditations support each other.
Yeah,
Now,
Urmsa says that, first of all, if we're talking about practices of great vehicle, you understand that relative bodhicitta is essential. This is the door that brings you within the great vehicle. This is the thing that makes your practices to become practices of great vehicle. So this is you know, this relative mind of bodhicitta definitely needs to be generated. Now, when we talk about ultimate bodhicitta, we talk about an understanding of how things come into existence, that they come into existence by relying on the process of labeling, that they are merely imputed, that there is not, ultimately, the more you search, there is nothing that you could possibly point your finger and say, this is what it is. Now, everything comes into existence by interdependence, by relying on the process of labeling. When we talk about, and this is how we defined, let's say, briefly defined and separate the two aspects of bodhicitta, the relative and the ultimate. Now, you can have great explanation of those two aspects of bodhicitta in texts such as Lojong, which is the mind training text. You will find so many methods for developing the relative bodhicitta. You'll find the practices of Tonglen. And of course, these practices come in a certain order. So gradually, you will train yourself through the relative bodhicitta. And after that, you will start engaging more and more in meditations that have to deal with the subject of emptiness in order to develop ultimate bodhicitta as well. One needs to understand that when we look at the development of the two types of bodhicitta from the point of view of time, right, initially there is a time where you cannot combine both. Rinpoche is saying it's like observing the process of walking with your two legs. When one leg is touching the ground, the other one is in the air. And when the second leg touches the ground, the one that was there before is lifted up. And what we mean by that is that initially you cannot really combine the ultimate with the relative. You will either be working with the relative or with the ultimate. Later on, at a stage where you have much more proficiency with those things, you can actually combine them, and you can say that you are employing at the same time both types of bodhicitta. Is that sufficient? Yeah. All right. So let's take a live one.
Previously, I think Rinpoche was saying that these siddhis can be considered helpful to practice. And in some Eastern religious practices, siddhis are considered impediments to the path of enlightenment. So I'm wondering if you can comment on those two opposing views, if I heard correctly.
Right, so once we were discussing the siddhis, we said that actually siddhis can be quite useful in the path, are tools that can bring us closer to enlightenment. And yet there is this other view, quite popular in, let's say, in Eastern tradition, that siddhis are impediments to enlightenment. So would Rinpoche care to comment on that or explain that? ngendu trubya ki thola dinde zuba desya resa da te kavla ngano so ngendu trubna ngano so chanchu ki sem tan lam go ya la tes karla go re da chap jor chen ta ngano so nyur da thartu ki ne chul di ko sangge ki kopan nyur thobya ki tapse chi resa ina ya sharchu gi lukso ka she ki oda ngendu trubna ta kyune ya pomen du halam parche so gi du roba che gi men du
Now,
Yeah, Rinpoche was saying, you know, when we talked about cities, we make the distinction between the supreme city and the common cities. And of course, the supreme city, which is the attainment of enlightenment, we don't need even to discuss it here. It's self-evident. Now, when we talk about common cities, now, common cities are usually established for the sake of sentient beings, so that you will be able to serve better sentient beings. If there is no need, if there is no great need, if there is no great demand, then there is no particular reason for engaging in practices that would bring about these results. Right? In a sense, they are optional.
Did I
hear correctly that one of the common cities is killing?
Bad guys or something?
All right, so one of the common cities that was mentioned here was killing. And who is it that we're trying to kill with these cities? You know, the bad guys? That seba seria de chirdan da migewa le res ngaro su su segres mi dukchala segres de su segres
oji da de ji tba thog ding ni mara won jur ding ni tinda ya na tb chen de su mara ji ma de ji dukchen ji yin ba ya na oji da de che thong de thong ne mara de da dong a sin na seba ya na ji se yon thong ni ti ji wa shama mara chu de ba tin zong bo ji la ji yon thong ni go Ninte Yomi Jena Sekari Mata, Kanjang Majamar, Kantuji Sekiwa Mariva, Tila, Sebala, Gisem Abuji, Yonati, Dranguivari, Penaji, Jagaraka Tripjan, the Zoo, Maratina Nanguivari, Poker Tripjan, Ralusa, Alasabata Zoo, Maraji, Karizugu, Dudjin Zamba, Chisum Sis in it, Satu Dingi Tindaga, Dudjin Zamba, Chisum, Dongari, Nyeva Ding Gurjan. Nyevachi John Juba me Ronald Tommy Denchi Yosi, not Densuji Yosi, that Guaji Yosan Guaro.
Now, when we talk about this city of killing, it's not just that you go out and you exterminate, you know, whoever you don't think is doing the right thing. There is always cause behind that killing, and also it has to, there is a lot, it is called a siddhi because there is a lot of attainment, there is a lot of capacity that is involved with that. You don't just merely kill someone, but you kill this person and you make sure that in the next migration they will establish a basis upon which they will practice the Dharma properly. So it's not just taking the bad guys out of the way. There are many stories of yogis in India. There are many stories of yogis in Tibet, such as Rolo Tsawa, who would engage in these practices. They would kill for a purpose. This is what he said, you know, and there was one particular case with Rolo Tsawa, who killed someone, and after that he composed this song, and he said, I killed him, and I had a purpose. I killed with a purpose. It is done when there is virtue in that, when there is purpose. Mm-hmm. Establish him on the ground.
Satwas abounded on the ground.
Salam is the two as in the Chosun.
He was the name of the practitioner who was killed. So Rolo Tsawa, after killing this individual, you can find the story in the biography of Marpa as well. Rolo Tsawa actually composed this four-line verse that I killed this person, it doesn't matter if, you know.
Hear the mantras from of other deities or earth spirits or anyway. I'm wondering, is it just hearing the mantras or is it hearing anything from them?
Yani bu cinadi sun papu bu ne dinle ya papa ya re dinle hla ya re dinle sa gangla nebe ta kunsu kare sungi re sun papu di kunsu kare sungi dosti nga chipu sungi re we se yame na jam min ra ta kalom min ra wa
ji da de gen wa wa ji ji ku no na ji chengur ku li no na ya ji ndam da ji kare se go Papa Susu Marzong, Tinder Donner, Yanji, Shanab, Shanab Tinder Toya, you think. Yan Marajin, Jigden, but had the Zong, Yanji Marati, Dong Guni, Yanji, Musarjin Tinder Toya, you think. Salan Jigden, but the Zoyana, Yan, Changuruka, he, Dong Samarashinji, loves young at the Zu Yang, Zonganda, Donner, Manda, Donner, Tinder, you, Rumunda, Mabuya, what's
So it is the case, all right, so the question was about this particular category of cities where we were looking at the speaker and we say that the speaker can either be an Arya, it can be a divine being, it can be those who abide above the earth and they pronounce the mantra. And the question was, do they only pronounce the mantra or they say other things as well? And Rabshe was saying that actually it's a great blessing to have the deity manifesting in front of you and the deity giving you directly their own mantra, right? Sometimes they manifest their mantala and together with that they give the sound of their own mantra. So in this particular case you might have an Arya giving you directly a mantra. You could have a deity giving you their particular mantra. You could have these other classes of beings that we mentioned.
Ni benaji garise go tinaji song yarwa ji jagar ni mara ngo ji ndi garise ore chujer ashoga chujer nyange me di ji da ji tru ji ji jabu ji ngi yarwa ti ji gen zambu len de no ji lan chote shiwa ji mara ti ji la mara yen ma yen se ji tinda yari oda de zo ji no yen se ne no yen ma ma ye de zo ma ten ya ko thir de mara kunne da na tso roba jin da jin asu ji ji wa o da te da tin da bu ji ngu du tin da thob ka la mama ye tso tin ya ko ya da ji tin ba la tso tin ya ko ya da ji tin nin di ba la tso tin ya ko ya da tin da ga ta ji wa
Now, to give you an example, for example, the great emperor Ashoka of India was someone who eventually was capable of establishing hundreds of stupas all over the dominion of, you know, his own dominion, right? And it is said that he was able to establish all that through the power of the cities and through the help that he received from yakshas and other non-human beings, right? So they supported him and they allowed him, they allowed him to build all these stupas.
Thank you so much for your infinite kindness and compassion of coming back here and doing these teachings. I have two questions. The first question is, in looking at the limited time we have on Earth, why would a person study anything other than the highest yoga? And in listening today, I mean, the depth of my meditation, you know, from the explanation of the morning has increased, and I could see that it benefits that practice. And perhaps he could expound on why to learn all about these other tantras. And the second is I don't know very much about Nawang Palden. If he could give a story of his life or something like that, that would be so generous.
Right, so the first question was like, given the importance of Hatha Yoga Tantra, why is it really that, and also the fact that we do not have a very great lifespan, why is it that we should spend time really, we should dedicate any time in studying the three lower classes of Tantra? Now, Ramchand replied to that like as in every other type of education, it is important to do things gradually. When you went to school, although let's say the first grade was not so important, not so interesting, nevertheless you had to go through grade one before you moved to grade two, to grade three, to grade four. Because if you were to skip any of those, your education would be incomplete. No matter how, let's say, low the steps are, nevertheless, you need to go gradually from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 in order to have a complete view. So this is the reason why we dedicate some time to study the lower tantras as well.
Okay.
Ramsha is saying is like, your question is like almost implying that you would like to have, let's say, a certificate that you have graduated from college without having any certificate that you have completed your education on primary or secondary education. It's impossible. They wouldn't even admit you to college, right? Now, another example we can use in that is the example of the steps of the ladder. If you're missing the first, the second, the third step, and you try to just go on the fourth step, probably you will fall down. Yeah? Okay, and your second question was maybe some information about the author of the text. ngawon peding ki nam tar dra uchi yoro es kona gi loju ko kare kare na sa
dadi yu yu jeri de dadi shil sabu ji chi ma sa dadi sabu mongol di kwa ji ngi wa ri wa kon tar jan badne chu ji se yu a di wa ji dang kwa chen bo yin ding di no ni la par de ji ge lu da ji zu di ji ren bu ji yin du ji ren bu ji song di ma ri jer zong ji ma ji
ဒီခွန်တဲ့ကြီးဝဒါရကရင်ခိပေဆောင်ယူနေတဆူတောင်းနဝဒါဂျီရမ်ဘုတ်ကြီးဆောင်တဲ့ရေရောက်ကြီးဂျီရမ်ဘုတ်ကြီးဆောင်အစက်ကမေနတီခိဒုပ်ကြီးတောင်းဂျာတပ်ကဆောင်ကြီးကတဆူနေယူနေတိစုံစုဝကြီးအမတော့တေလီဂျန်ဘုတ်ကြီးဂုံမောင်ကြီးချန်တာလူစားလင်ကြီးချန်တာယူချန်တာမန္တရယူဝဒဆူဂျီဆောင်တဲ့မတ်တဲ့နတာဒီရောက်ဆောင်စင်ခိမနေတင်တဲ့ကဝဒန်ခိဝဆံကြီးမချဘကြီးဟင်ကြီးပါ Rinpoche says, I'm sure there is a biography somewhere of Nawam Peldon. I can tell you, I have been looking for it for quite a while. But right now we don't know much about him. We know that he was from Mongolia. We know his full name as it appears at the end of the text, which is Nawam Peldon Choje. Choje as like the Lord of Dharma. And from what we can see from this text, he is always referring to the works of the great Lama Tsongkhapa. If there is any point or if there is any debate, he just goes back and says, Lama Tsongkhapa says this, or he doesn't mention that. And if he doesn't directly quote Lama Tsongkhapa, then he would quote the two main disciples, Kedrup Je or Kelsab Je. Other than that, he doesn't seem to quote any of the other, let's say, manuals or texts of Gomang, Losaling, any other monasteries, any other texts. So he seems to be someone who is very well versed on the words of Lama Tsongkhapa. That's what we can say from this text. Maybe I can ask one more from this paper. So the question has to do about the six deities, and it says, please clarify how we move from meditating on the first deity to the second, to the third, to the fourth, to the fifth, to the sixth, and so on. How to determine the point to shift from meditating on the deity of emptiness to meditating on the emptiness of sound, and so forth. Rinpoche la di nga rong su ta kare hla chuki go ne dake drup korwaas. Tambo di hla tambo ne hla nipa ne sumpa le siwa la sopo. Dinre rinpe kale kale ki dinre gom gore sa. Yin na yang di hla tambo go ne tsam kabar sha gore sa. Ta drik song gore sa. Hla tombe hla di halam yabu chik drup yo sa. Tanda hla nipa tena la gom gore sa.
ตัจฉิกันเตสตัจฉิเรสติซัมซัมลองอะติกันเตสาโกซัมมะรัมบะรัมบะจิมะจิกงกุกงกุจิวะยะนะสะวะมะเกยะติญตะยะนะจิเจนระโวจิกะริสะโกตัจฉิชวะนะจิริกุมโตตัมโพซองญิวะซองสัมปะซองเตจิเนตินิงุจิติวะติทุกโกวิวะระวะจิติรัมบะรัมบะมาจินะโลจิโลธรรมจิยะนะลัมซองโหติกะละกุมลิกุมตองติ ที่เชฟซาวดาเตนดางุมซึงนี่ที่เปนะเนี่ยปกติจองจองมายาลองนึงดูว่าเยนะบะมีลองกุนะจิกะเจตินี่คอมเปจิกะเกนจิกะนี่จะเกนเตนี่เรมิเรมกุมกุกอมกะละนามชินะมาละปันเจมกุมมีโคราวมายาลองนึงดูตะจิวะระวะอีตัมโพวะละเตนดะมาจิกะริซึกุเรมบันดะโวมัมโพจิดึกนะดูโกวิโยติวะเตนดะกุดูตังกิโย
Yanji
tizo ganga dijula tu samten senada tinda yamba yendu choki tsudi kali kali gandongun dongula samu nani marji gumda wo jabki jabka yang yapo masherna tsudazo yangli tekani yang tori gum jab or that tinda jima rimba yendu dogun dogu chiku yuwa.
So what Rinpoche was stressing here is that it's very important to follow the ritual that you have, the text that you have that describes the order of the way of meditating and how to move from the first to the second to the third deity. Actually, Rinpoche was saying maybe the most important thing in this question was already included within the question, is the fact that you have to do these meditations in order. You move from the first deity to the second, from the second to the third, from the third to the fourth, from the fourth to the fifth, from the fifth to the sixth. The order is prescribed, and you have to do this practice following Following this particular order. And you do that, initially you will not have proficiency. Initially some things will be unclear. You will not totally understand them. But as time goes by and as you develop familiarity with this process, you will be able to do it much quicker and with more clarity. The analogy that is given here is the analogy of a child, of a toddler, that is just learning how to walk or even just learning how to stand on their own feet. Initially, they cannot do it on their own. The two parents, they stretch out their hands and they provide some support, right? After a while, the child is capable maybe of standing up on its own, but is not capable of walking. And finally, there will be a time where the child is capable of quickly getting up and running around. So it happens like this with our meditation as we develop more familiarity. The important thing is to follow the text and gradually move from one point into the other. Now, if you come to a point where you read something and the meaning is unclear or something is unclear with this thing, then it's good to stop with the reading of the text and stop for a few minutes and consider that thing, right? So allow your mind to work a little bit more with that issue. And then again, resume the reading of the text. And this should guide you. This should be enough to guide you along your meditation. Now there are two analogies that are relevant, and they described how beginners do their practices. The first one is the analogy of an old man who needs to rely on a walking aid, on a walking stick, right? So if you have an old person who cannot really get up from their chair very quickly, you know that what they do is they first put down their walking stick, and then by relying on that, they raise themselves. And this raising, it happens, let's say, 50% due to the stick, but also 50% due to the effort of the person. So in our meditation, it's like this. You know, we make some effort from our side, but we also have certain aids upon which we rely. And the other good example is the example of the blind person. Now, if a blind person is trying to navigate themselves, again, they're using a stick, and they're trying in the dark to find their way and hopefully avoid too many obstacles. So beginners should move like that, with a lot of caution and by using all these walking sticks. I think we stop here for tonight.